540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Monica Ricks. Police are still looking for those responsible for killing two people at a Juneteenth celebration near Austin, Texas. Our correspondent, Peter King.
It happened in Round Rock, north of Austin, at a Juneteenth concert event. A fight led to gunshots. When it was over, two people were dead and several others wounded.
The suspects took off running. Suspects were not taken into custody.
Round Rock Police Chief Alan Banks.
So having an event like this, where we're here to celebrate Juneteenth and to come together as a community is a terrific monumental event for us. But then when you have it marred by senseless tragedy as such that happened at Old Settlers Park, it just breaks your heart.
Peter King, CBS News.
In Detroit, at least nine people were hurt, including two children, in another mass shooting at a splash pad. Rochester Hills Mayor Brian Barnett.
When I got on scene, I started to cry because I know what a splash pad is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a place where people gather, where families make memories, where people have fun and enjoy a Saturday afternoon.
One of those kids is in critical condition after getting shot in the head. Israel's army has agreed to a limited pause in fighting now to allow humanitarian aid deliveries into Gaza. John Donison's with the BBC.
You've got thousands of trucks backed up waiting to bring aid in. This should allow some relief, more trucks to go in, but we know that the situation is especially desperate in the north of Gaza in terms of getting aid up there. So we'll just have to wait and see.
They're said to happen every day now till further notice.
Free, free Palestine!
Dozens of pro-Palestinian protesters marched outside of President Biden's star-studded fundraiser last night in Los Angeles. Demonstrators blocked the entrance, demanding a ceasefire, but police say they didn't make any arrests, and it didn't stop donors. Biden's campaign says the event helped raise more than $30 million. Another part of the country is bracing for intense heat this week. Meteorologist Brian Hurley is tracking it from the National Weather Service.
Ohio Valley, upper Midwest, and then all of the northeastern corridor are going to experience more unusual heat, temperatures much more above normal, and likely to see quite a few records broken.
This is the same heat wave that fried parts of the West and Southwest last week. NASA's Voyager 1 is sending science data again. The Jet Propulsion Laboratory says the spacecraft's four instruments are back in business after a computer problem that happened back in November. Voyager 1 launched in 1977, and it's the most distant spacecraft from Earth. It's exploring interstellar space like its twin, Voyager 2. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. A new report shows Wisconsin does a great job providing resources to keep some kids happy and healthy. However, white kids are benefiting the most, while research shows the Badger State is the worst in the nation for black families. Mike Moen reports.
An annual report suggests Wisconsin has a strong foundation in creating positive outcomes for kids. But low test scores and racial disparities show not all youth are faring well. The Annie E. Casey Foundation's latest Kids Count data book ranks Wisconsin 11th in the country for child well-being. The state saw a slight dip in its child poverty rate, falling to 13%. However, Emily Mayota of the statewide policy group Kids Forward says the positive results mask persistent disparities for the Badger State.
Wisconsin remains the worst state in the nation for black children and families.
For example, black children were 29 times more likely to live in high poverty areas than white children. Those disparities also spill over into education. The report contends the pandemic is not solely to blame for the country's worsening educational outcomes. The Casey Foundation's Leslie Bossier says educators, researchers, policymakers, and employers who track students' academic readiness have been ringing alarm bells for a long time.
The pandemic erased decades of increases in math scores. However, if you look over the 35 years that we've produced the data book, we've never seen a significant percentage of children who were either proficient in fourth grade reading or more basic math.
The report calls on all states to expand access to intensive tutoring for students who are behind in their classes and missing academic milestones. Wisconsin did see a worsening rate of young children not attending school. This is Mike Mowen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. On this Father's Day, we'll have some showers and thunderstorms, then a mix of clouds and sunshine, highs of the lower 80s, south winds breezy. In the overnight, partly cloudy, lows near 70. On Monday, another chance of storms, highs in the upper 80s. Right now, it's 64.
Pat Kreitlow.
Monday on Up North News Radio, Megan Rowe from Opportunity Wisconsin talks about their work to remind voters of candidates' real records, not just their rhetoric.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Matt Nair on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to the Cripes Cast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. We are powered by Everlight Solar, and here is today's episode. Hello, folks. How we doing? It's a very special day to me because this is a podcast I've been looking forward to doing for a long, long time. Yes, it is all about artificial intelligence. And for those of you who are rolling your eyes, saying this doesn't affect me at all. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah, don't. Honestly.
Because it's going to affect you whether you want it to or not. And my goal with this podcast is to make it so you are as prepared as possible for the introduction of artificial intelligence or continued introduction of artificial intelligence into our society. And I mean this from the perspective of your job. But also the perspective of your safety and the perspective of how we as humans can interact with each other to help ensure AI safety and how we act and interact with ourselves. And I forgot to ask if we should be nice to the computers too. Anyways, that'll be for a different podcast. How we interact with ourselves and how we encourage others to respond, and the types of ways we interact with technology. And by that, I mean double checking sources, all this stuff that sounds kind of boring. So it's never been more important to do this stuff. And so, Colleen,
as your fellow layman and like general, like representative of the general population, let me just say, they really help explain a lot of stuff. I'm not even just saying this because I work for you. Like, and I'm not saying this because I'm producing the podcast. Like, it's not like it's something that we if you've watched the podcast and you know I roll my eyes every time he says AI, I'm being dead honest. Like, it helps. Like, listen to this.
Colleen's superpower in this podcast, she has an integral role of representing
the village idiot.
Not the village idiot.
I'm saying that to myself.
But I think your approach to AI was mine for a long time until I honestly started using it and realized, oh shoot, my job's in jeopardy. Mm. So once I found that it was important to me, so I'm not like smart, I just am selfish. But that's what got me into it. And Colleen, you know, you've kind of taken this approach of like, what does it matter? Is it really that big of a deal? Is it really going to take over?
I think when we were talking about it and doing like the pre-production of it, I just kept on asking, so why does it matter?
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't think that it does. I just want to understand how it impacts me
in the simplest terms. And so it's great. We've had you over here behind the camera. And when something didn't kind of make sense in the podcast, you chimed in. So really great in a lot of great areas to have Provost really dive into that. So it was a great app.
I brought up WALL-E. And
you brought up WALL-E.
That's the most important part.
Yeah. That was a great question, though.
But yeah, no, I think it's like, it's a very, it's a food for thought podcast. And I think it's important. You guys cover a lot of great stuff, and having you guys both be, obviously he's like an expert and you're someone that also has an expert level of Googling about it.
Yeah, I'm like an expert in the way like Aaron Rodgers is an expert on immunizations. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like a guy, that's as much as I have. A guy with interest. I'm a enthusiast.
Yeah, I would say like over the general population, you have more, like you've read more about it. You have more interest about it. Whereas like me, it's like it's probably not wise the way that I am approaching it. I only want to approach it once it's affecting me, which is so reactive, not proactive.
Right. And I think what we're trying to do is give you guys as much information as possible in this podcast so you can be proactive and not reactive. And I know for some people it's like, you know, you have this job that you've done. And Provost, by the way, before I dive into that, which is an important point, I just want to let you know a little bit more about Provost Isbell. He is a computationalist, a researcher, an educator. He is an advocate for access to higher education. He received his Bachelor of Science degree from Georgia Tech, continued his education at the Artificial Intelligence Laboratory at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, ladies and gents.
Damn.
After earning his PhD from MIT in 98, Provost Isbell joined AT&T Labs Research in the fall of 2002. He returned to Georgia Tech to join the faculty of the College of Computing. And I'm reading all this because it's so impressive.
Yeah,
so
what did we get degrees
in? What's that?
What did we get degrees in?
I don't even want to go into what I,
you know,
yeah.
What I mean? Like, this is we why are the expert. A
couple journalism majors here.
Yeah.
One of us took it more seriously than the other. And
you. And like, but
hang on, hang on. Yeah, I'm not going, done. In 2008, he became an associate dean for the college. And that college again is Georgia Tech. 4 years later, in 2012, he became the senior associate dean. In 2017, became the executive associate dean. In 2019, he became the fourth dean of the college. And again, that's all Georgia Tech. So he's a smart dude.
The proof is in the pudding.
And he is an expert in artificial intelligence, and he is in what he's doing at the University of Wisconsin with the Wisconsin Idea, which Colleen, being a proud Badger, you know all about the Wisconsin Idea. Is this the Wisconsin Idea?
It's the Wisconsin hands.
You know, but the Wisconsin Idea is something very specific. And I'll just say from being at the journalism school at the University of Wisconsin, you know, what's written on the side of the building is through the continued sifting and winnowing through which truth alone can be found. So that's an important aspect to what the conversation we're going to go into. Sifting and winnowing is how you find truth. That is so necessary today. You'll find through this conversation with Provost Isbell that it is going to be on all of us individually to take responsibility to make sure that the information that we're learning and even the information you get in this podcast, check it, you know, especially if I'm saying it, for God's sake. Double check it, triple check it. Understand where your sources are coming from. Understand who is has an interest in the source you're reading, you know. A lot of sources just don't waste your time with if you know they have a bias. I mean, that's my personal opinion, but if you want to watch Fox News, MSNBC, God bless. But I think that there's going to be a lot of responsibility on us as individuals to really understand where information is coming from, really be researchers and honest researchers and journalists individually, and also to increase our capacity to love, especially those that may not agree with us. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be some hippie talk in this, but there's reasons to do it selfishly and to do it for yourself if you don't want to do it for the right reasons, or if you're like, really, I gotta like a guy who likes that guy or would vote for that guy, that you know. So anyways,
it's the main thing that you guys really honed in on too is short term versus long term.
Yes.
And yeah. I was kind of thinking about it like I felt like I was on a plane and he was like the flight attendant, and like, I'm not going to worry if he's not worried. And so like watching you guys talk and him talking and like kind of bringing down like to reality how, if I should be worried about something or not, like him being calm about it and having this knowledge and career and like kind of putting into perspective of like how much I should worry about it made me feel more at ease.
You know what? That is a really great analogy.
You know?
Yeah.
Listening to this podcast, producing it and asking questions and where we're going, I felt more at ease of like someone who is so ingrained in it and has been into it since he was 8 years old and had such a like love for computers and robots and all this type of thing. Like that made me feel so much better about it. Cause I think like another thing is too, when he was saying, I don't want to give away the whole thing, but there's a lot of parts in here where he was like, if you are too overwhelmed and then you just don't do anything about it, that's where I'm at. And that's like the worst outcome that could come from it.
Yeah.
And he explains a lot better. I'm paraphrasing, yada, yada. But yeah, I think it's.
But truthfully, if you are in a job right now, and that's a big motivation of mine is kind of worrying about like one of the immediate or short term reasons to care about this, because you said he talked about short term versus long term. He's saying that from a societal perspective, if we can care 40 years down the line as opposed to 2 years down the line or 1 year about our or just about our family, if we can broaden our care to 40 years and make it about all of us, that's really going to help our family. In the short term, caring just about your family, that could be good for your family.
Yeah.
In the long term, caring just about your family, that's not going to be good for your family.
Yeah. The only thing I think about, and I think I told you this, is just like the short term, some people don't have the privilege to think long term.
No, I understand that. And first of all, I also want to throw this out there is if you don't have the capacity to think long term, like you're worried about where your next meal is coming from, maybe this podcast is just something to listen to of interest or to just inform you of what's coming. I still think whether you can't put food on the table today, which is a huge problem, or you can, you have a trust fund. I think this podcast is going to be beneficial, and that's my goal. And our goal is to just give you information so you know what's coming. And it's not to scare you, but it's to give you information and also give you some tools that can make you help, that can allow you to help make this world a better place. And one thing I want you to think about as we have this conversation is like, if you know what your job is and you know that you could imagine how a computer could do it pretty easily, you know, I think it's time to start understanding that that could be a reality sooner as opposed to later. Not in a way to freak you out, but just
encouragement of like, how can it? Sorry, I cut you off. Encouragement of like, how can you use the tools to one, be better at your job with the tools, or two, pivot or see other opportunities by using AI?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. How can you embrace AI to be more valuable at your job in maybe the near term and in the long term? Yeah, exactly. What are other things that interest you that you can maybe start doing on the side and start building up now, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, that's a long way of saying
I'm going to start a different business on the side of this one.
Yeah, you should. Your job is in jeopardy. Yeah. That's for sure. No, I'm kidding. But anyways, very fun and exciting interview. And I also want to say, like, I've spent a lot of time talking about the negative sides of AI, but there are a lot of positive elements. And I do think if we utilize AI in the best way possible, it's going to be very good, but it's going to be hard to utilize it in the best way possible because there are a lot of systems that we've already seen that are making that difficult. So look at me. I'm trying to talk about the positive. I'm already bringing in the pessimistic. There's a lot of ways and exciting things AI can do. So we talk about those in this podcast as well. And of course, before we get to our podcast today, I want to let everybody know that you can donate to Doctors Without Borders. We are continuing to raise money for Doctors Without Borders. They are doing great work for folks who need medical care around the world, especially in the hardest hit places, specifically the Middle East I'm thinking of right now. You can go to doctorswithoutborders.org. You can also follow them at Doctors Without Borders. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to have a conversation with the University of Wisconsin, Madison, my alma mater.
Same.
And Colleen's Provost, Charles Isbell. We are honored to have him, and here is our conversation.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for coming on and chit-chatting.
Of course.
You got a great first name. I just want to say, as someone who also has that name, so I just want to say, us Charleses have to stick together. But to begin, can you just give people a sense of your background and how you decided to go into this realm of expertise?
Oh, I'm happy to do it. So I'm happy to tell you anything that you want to know. So let me know if I'm not telling you the secret parts of my life that you weren't hearing anything about. So I will tell you the short version of it all. I have been interested in AI and machine learning and all those various other buzzwords from the time I was about 8 years old. What I was really motivated by was the idea that I could tell a computer what to do and it would be smart and I would be able to build a smart thing. So Data from Star Trek The Next Generation, C-3PO and from Star Wars, even going back to HAL, just the idea that you could build a machine that was smart and intelligent and would go off and do smart and intelligent things and just ever capture my imagination from the time that before I can even remember. And one of the first things that I did in high school is build a robot. Build something cool. That would run and do really cool things. I fell in love with the idea, and I've been doing it in one form or another ever since.
Nice. Now, I got to ask, which you mentioned Star Trek, you mentioned Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Which one was the movie that inspired you to go down the artificial intelligence train? Do you have a character specifically?
Well, you can't see it, but right over here, I have a replica of a lightsaber, right next to it, I have a portrait of Captain Sisko from Deep Space Nine. So I am happy to do both of those things, and I find inspiration from both of them.
Okay, cool, nice. It's also funny. I just want to say how sci-fi I feel like has influenced technology today. Or we're starting to see a lot of, like, even in Star Trek, like the early cell phone kind of looks like that, mm-hmm. You know, which kind of makes sense. Comes from the same brain. You know, our inspiration back then is similar to the one for today. So that's where your inspiration came from. And then as far as were you in robotics early on? Was this sort of an on your own type thing?
It was both an on your own type thing when I was young and I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I'm old enough that, you know, certainly no one had cell phones, but everyone didn't have their own computer. Everyone didn't have access to these kinds of things. So, you know, you had to be somewhat of a hobbyist just to be interested at all. But I very quickly got, you know, learned how to do this in school. It's what I spent most of my time doing in my undergraduate degree and all my time doing once I was a graduate student. So I had lots of support as I moved into high school and moved into college to think about this. But the robotics itself wasn't the part that was interesting to me, although the embodiment really matters. It was just the idea that you could do intelligent things and that you could have someone to talk to who was smart and could learn over time. It was kind of like, you know, having a kid without all of the messy parts.
What is the University of Wisconsin currently doing with respect to artificial intelligence, and what are you like most excited about there?
So there's a couple answers to your question. So it helps to think about what AI is, and you know you brought up a little earlier about inspiration. So if I were to give you a definition of AI, I would say that the truth is whatever it is we say. It's really about making computers act the way they do in the movies, right? It's about the kind of magic of having a machine that does something. And what Wisconsin is doing is basic work in AI. You know, people like me who sit around thinking about computer science and deriving equations and actually dealing with the algorithms and that kind of a thing. And that's really important. But what Wisconsin does better than many, many places is because it's such a broad place that has everything and cares about lots and lots and lots of fields, it's thinking about AI in the context of health. It's thinking about AI in the context of human behavior. It's doing these sort of really, really big things. So what excites me about that is that we have an opportunity here not just to do the AI, you know, as an AI nerd, but to do the AI and understand how it's actually going to impact the world. And so what really, really excites me is the big investment that we're making over the next 3 years in what we call the RISE Initiative, and in particular, the RISE AI Initiative, where we're going to hire somewhere between 120 and 150 new faculty on top of all the faculty would have hired anyway in these spaces, with the idea of doing something really big at scale that involves the economists, that involves the people in the School of Human Ecology, that involves health, that involves vet med, that involves all of these different parts of the university, and bring it all together to do big, big things in AI and machine learning.
Yeah, I mean, and you, I'll just go right into the hiring. You're talking about all the people you're hiring because of AI. But I think that obviously it's true that with AI, a lot of jobs are going to go away. Mm-hmm. Do you feel as though that technology is going to progress in a way that allows those people without jobs will find something new right away? Or do you see AI creating large amounts of unemployment, if not in the long term, before we can find them new jobs in the short term?
So you could make a claim not too long ago that new technologies have always gotten rid of some jobs, but created more than they've gotten rid of. I don't see any reason that that won't continue to be true, except for one small thing, which is that it's happening so fast that there's lots of short-term disruption. But you know what, pretend we're not talking about AI or we're talking about machine learning or whatever. What we're really talking about is computers doing things. I mean, not just the roboticists who, or the robotics that are carving out and deboning chicken faster than human beings can do, which we do have. There's actually a lot of robots that do that, but are actually making some key decisions. So it's affecting a different set of people. It's gone beyond physical labor and repetition automation to let's call it thinking labor, and making sort of obvious kinds of or short-term decisions. Those things are going to be easier and more automated. But what it's going to do is free up the ability to make higher level decisions, to be more strategic, to think really carefully about other kinds of things you otherwise would simply not have the time to do. So the people who are in a place where they're prepared to partner with the sort of analysis that AI will be doing in the future will be fine and be able to do more interesting things. Will there be a problem in the short term? Yes. Is this something that's relatively easy to fix if we can provide access to education for people? Absolutely. So, you know, don't ask me about a particular March, April, or May, but ask me about a particular year, and I think we'll be fine over the span of a year or two or three, even if it's going to maybe look scary over a particular month or two.
Yeah, I mean, I think the potential for it to look scary is going to happen largely because of what you brought up, that exponential, or you didn't bring up exponential, you just brought up the rate of growth of this technology. Mm-hmm. It's just growing faster than technology has in the past, which is sort of a critical thing, I think, for like the layperson to understand, or just your average person to like understand AI. And this I'm bringing up from my perspective because I didn't really think much of it until I learned about sort of the exponential growth of technology. And can you explain the exponential growth of technology, kind of what it is, why people bring it up within the context of AI? Otherwise, I can tell you what I know and you can tell me where I'm getting it wrong.
Sure. So, you know, people use the word exponential just to mean really fast. Oh, this is exponentially more than it was yesterday. Well, that's not what exponential really means. Exponential means that it keeps growing and multiplying at the same rate at every single step. And that moves really, 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 really fast. So when I say it moves exponentially fast, that means I go from 2 to 4, but then 4 to 8, and then 8 to 16, to 32, to 64, to 128. And after 10 steps, I'm in 1,000. But if I were moving linearly, or moving at the rate we normally think about it, I'd have only been at 10. So moving from 10 in 10 steps to 1,000 in 10 steps is a really huge deal. So it means that, for example, if I look at all the kind of data in the world that's being generated over the last 10 years, we've gone from the point where we were generating a certain amount of data over the span of a year to a point where we're generating that same amount of data in an hour. So imagine change going that fast. You can't possibly, as a human being, react to it quickly enough. So exponential does not just mean really fast or twice as much as you had before. It means 1,000 times more than you had last week and 100,000 more than you had 2 weeks ago. It very quickly moves to a point where you're generating more information than you have ever been generated in the entire history of humanity in the span of a year. And it's going to then be 10 times more than that, and then 100 times more than that. So it's a really big deal. And that can be scary, and scary for good reason. But the good news is we also can't react to it fast enough. So even as technology is outgrowing us, when we're thinking about jobs and opportunities, we can only move so fast in thinking about what it would mean to take advantage of it as well. So things get slowed down by physics, things get slowed down by the kinds of decisions that we're going to have to make. It means we won't take advantage of things as quickly as we could, but it also means it'll give us enough time to be able to react to it. That's the good news.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Two people are dead in a shooting at a Juneteenth festival in Texas. Round Rock Police Chief Alan Banks.
An altercation broke out between two groups. During that altercation, someone produced a gun and began to fire.
Six others were injured in the shooting. Near Detroit, a shooter is dead after injuring nine people, including children, at a splash pad. Oakley County Sheriff Michael Bouchard.
We'll be looking for any evidence or manifesto or anything that would give us an inclination of what, you know, may be driving this individual prior to this terrible moment. We have no contact on record with him.
Authorities say he killed himself shortly after the mass shooting. And the Stars came out to support President Biden last night in Los Angeles, helped raise more than $30 million for his reelection campaign. AJ Catalonis with the Editors Guild.
He's real. He's not in it for himself. He's not in it for revenge or retribution. He's in it for the job.
CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Brewers head west. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers leave tonight for a West Coast road trip. They'll play the Angels tomorrow night. Then Thursday, they'll start a four-game series against the Padres. Last night, bottom of the fifth, two men on. Joey Ortiz at bat on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
Ortiz sends out in the air, deep left field. This is back. Fifth inning.
The final, Milwaukee 3, the Reds 1. After the game, winning pitcher Bryce Wilson asked if he liked trading Corbin Burns to the Orioles for Joey Ortiz.
I mean, what's not to like? I mean, you guys put 290. I feel like when he came over, the big thing was the defense, and we've seen the defense, and I think the Orioles messed up. I'm not going to lie to you.
That's Bryce Wilson. We'll have a full recap of today's game coming up from AmFam Field. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. On this Father's Day, we'll have some showers and thunderstorms, then a mix of clouds and sunshine, highs of the lower 80s, south winds breezy. In the overnight, partly cloudy, lows near 70. On Monday, another chance of storms, highs in the upper 80s. Right now, it's 64.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
What is the worst movie franchise? Do you have one, Conrad?
What are your thoughts on Transformers?
I saw one Transformer movie. I think it was the first one. I didn't even know what the hell was going on.
I can't get into them anymore because, you know, it's the same every movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if you knew which Transformer. I know there's like testosterone and overload and whatever, testosterone.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Maggie Dawn.
Coming up on the show, Maggie's back in the saddle, and we talk about Biden's top 100. This week, we're talking about the environment.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, I'm Charlie Behrens, and you're listening to the Cripescast on Civic Media. Here's my conversation with Provost Charles Isbell of the University of Wisconsin. I was just going to go into, because your good news, and you were just bringing up the bad news, because your good news, though, sounded good and reassuring. I immediately thought of some bad news in that. And maybe you're about to say that right now. So
tell me what your bad news is, and I'll tell you.
Okay. Well, here's my bad news. Some like OpenAI, which is like creating the just doubling down and doubling down. They're trying to get to AGI, which I'll let you explain in a second because I'm probably going to screw it up. But it's getting to a point where we get so fast technologically that the computers understand more than people. And now you have all these computers on a level. And let me give you my paranoid doomsday scenario. And you can tell me, yes, that's possible, or no, Charlie, you need to stop smoking things that cause paranoia. Mm-hmm. And I will listen to either of those. But what I'm thinking is you make these computers so smart, 1,000 times smarter than humans or whatever it is. At the same time, you've got these humanoid robots working in the factories, you know, doing the things that humans can do. And then at some point, the computers, since they're smarter than humans, they find a way to connect and link up with these humanoid robots and put their brains in the humanoid robots. And then you have some that's 700 times stronger than us, that's 1,000 times smarter than us, with access to gene editing, you know, because we've got the gene editing, you can kind of make designer babies if you want. Can they then create with that a new human species? And will at the same time you have humans putting in Neuralink or something like Elon Musk's Neuralink that is currently helping people with neurodegenerative diseases become fine? But will you then have sort of these hybrid human computer species and also this computer species, and you have a whole new species that is smarter and stronger and superior? And as humans know, whenever we are the top species, I don't think there's been many examples of a top species looking at a lesser species and not saying, how do we use you for what you can do to serve us, or just kill you altogether? We got a lot of, you know, species around the planet that we've sort of sent by the wayside just for our progress. So that's doomsday scenario, like the Terminators. Pretty much every sci-fi movie made about artificial intelligence kind of has some ending in that way. So that would be one scenario. I'll lay it out there for you to let me know. Yeah, that's something to be concerned about, which I think it is, because we have all these AI safety people setting up all sorts of stuff around the world right now. Or that's not as realistic as you might think, and here's some reasons why.
Okay, so one, I appreciate your highly optimistic nature. So I think here's my
answer. Hang on. I am optimistic about some of it, but that's I guess I can be a little pessimistic or paranoid, you know. And if it's paranoid, I'm definitely willing to hear it. But it's a thought I can't. I can be creative about good things or bad things, you know, but you should hear the good one. I have a good scenario too there, but that's a bad one.
I mean, I have a bunch of good scenarios, but here's the thing. Here's my answer to your question. Mm. It could happen. It's possible. It won't happen. Because in order for it to happen, a bunch of things have to go wrong from our point of view, including the idea that the machines would even be interested in any of this, which isn't clear to me that they would be. I mean, in order for that to be the case, you would have to have a machine that falls into one, or a set of machines that have all these resources. By the way, unclear to me that those resources actually exist and enough. There's enough of it out there that they could move that quickly. But one or two things would have to happen. Well, the first thing would have to happen is we'd have to create AGI, which I don't know that I believe is going to happen anytime soon. But even if we did, they'd have to be interested in subjugating us. I'm not sure why they would be. Or they'd have to not care about us and then do things that have the side effect of destroying us and not notice and not care. And I'm not sure either of those things is actually very likely at the speed at which it would have to happen for us to really lose out in the apocalyptic way that you're describing. It could happen. But that's not what I'm worried. What I'm worried about is that we will use this technology as human beings and we will make decisions where we will harm ourselves. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about the gun deciding that it wants to shoot us. What I'm worried about is that we will use the gun to shoot us. And we're already doing that. We're already using technology in ways that's harmful for other people. We're much more likely to do it to ourselves than we are for it to do it to us.
And really great point. And real quick, we do have a question from our from Colleen, who's coming from the... Yes, Colleen?
To define the difference between AI and AGI, because you said you're not too concerned about that, but I don't even know what that is.
Great question.
All right. So the way we use it in the sort of popular way is AI is just sort of anything that appears somewhat intelligent, right? It's computing and the various other things that moves in a way that's intelligent. AGI, which is sort of general intelligence, is something that is not just smart or appears intelligent, but appears smart and intelligent about everything or all the ways in which human beings appear to be intelligent. So you can build a system that's really, really good at recognizing people or voices. I mean, we kind of have that now, right? You know, you have your phone, it recognizes your face, it knows it's you, it's very smart at that. That's different from a machine that can figure out any number of things. It can do math, it can write poems, it can run podcasts, it can detect errors and, you know, 18,000 things. It can debone chicken. It can do everything and anything. So we think of ourselves as generally smart, that we could learn anything and retain everything we've ever known versus becoming very good at a very specific thing. So you can be good at a very specific thing and call that AI, or you could be potentially good at everything, a single thing, or a single entity could be good at everything. And we call that artificial general intelligence.
Yeah. Nice. Two thumbs up. So solid on that explanation from Colleen. And basically what you were saying before that now is your greater concern than the robots figuring it out is humans using it in sort of a improper way. I think before we go farther down the road of that and sort of the skepticism around artificial intelligence, I think the real reality of it is it's there, it's out of the box. Mm-hmm. We've been using it, and either we develop it and understand how to utilize it, or a place like China is going to do the same thing. And kind of the way the world has worked, whoever is on the top edge of the technology curve is, I mean, that's been the way the world has worked to continue to follow this technology thing, and they kind of have the best outcomes from that. So I think looking at this in sort of a very positive light, what are you most hopeful about with artificial intelligence, and what gets you excited as a guy who's sort of lived in this world for so long?
It's that we finally gotten to the point that what AI is now good at is things that human beings actually care about, right? So, you know, I could tell a very long, highly technical and deeply boring story about what AI actually is and how it connects to computing and a whole bunch of things. But at the end of the day, what's changed between 1990 and today is that we don't just have more computing power, which we do. We don't just have more data, which we do, but that computing power is available to everyone, and or at least more and more people. And that data is about humans. So what's really neat about this, and where you're actually seeing the kind of things that people are excited about, I mean, everyday people are excited about, is that we can think about how to use this technology to make the specific things that people do better. So there's this idea of a centaur, right, which is based on the, you know, half horse, half man mythical creature, where it turns out that machines are better than we are at a lot of things. We're better than they are at a bunch of things. And when you put us together, we're even better than either could be alone. So I can write a program that's very good at chess, That would be AI, but it wouldn't be AGI because it's not good at Go or it's not good at soccer, but it's good at chess and maybe even better than any human chess player alive. It turns out if you pair that incredibly good chess savant with a person who's not even very good at chess, but kind of knows the rules of chess or at least knows how games work, you will actually get a better joint player than that very smart computer chess player alone. So we are good at some things, very good at pattern matching, very good at understanding what the rules are. And the machines are very, very good at counting very, very, very fast and not getting bored or tired of it. And when you put those two things together, you can do something the human couldn't do alone, and the machine actually wouldn't be very good at doing alone. So now take that from chess to determining your schedule. Take that from chess to figuring out the best way to write a recommendation letter for someone. Do that for helping to come up with a set of interesting questions at a podcast, just to make up a completely random example, right? There's all of these things that you could do that are easier for you as a person, but that a machine on its own almost certainly wouldn't get right. And so it's better for you as the person because it's human fundamentally, but it's a lot less work. It's convenient, it's better, and it makes you better at the thing that you're interested in doing. That I think is exciting because we go back 30 years. That was what was hard to do. I could replace you deboning chicken, but I couldn't help you think about the right set of questions to ask about how to make interesting new dishes that might feed more people more cheaply. And now I can do that because as a person, I think about those things. A machine can help you to do fast analysis.
Yeah. And I think, it's where I get the most excited about it is sort of its potential to help us figure out maybe how to sequester carbon using less resources, where that could be a way to help with climate change, or to eliminate plastic, or find alternatives to plastic, but also remove plastic from the ocean or remove microplastics, because we all have microplastics, or remove PFAS from the water sources in sort of an inexpensive way. Those are all very exciting things. So as much as I have paranoia about AI doing those things, at the end of the day, I'm hopeful for a lot of those. Do you see that humans, or how do we push humans to kind of find the beneficial solutions for AI and to keep pushing down that road, as opposed to going off the rails of your concern where humans would use AI against other humans? How do we get to a point where we can create laws around AI, given perhaps the age of Congress and the lack of sort of interest Congress has maybe seriously shown in this, or the slowness to come up with new laws? Like, what's a good way to kind of get Congress knowledgeable about this stuff to create laws in a fast enough way to keep up with the technology, so we don't have somebody use an AI model to, say, figure out how to siphon a bunch of money out of the stock market, and then one person in the world has $1 trillion, and then you have a depression or whatever. Sorry, I keep coming up with these these nightmare scenarios, but I'm just throwing that out there as an example. How do we get Congress up to date with the technology fast enough to keep up with technology?
So the mistake that we end up making, so by the way, I will say I've testified before Congress a few times, and I have been in what I'll call controversial subjects around, for example, education and access. And I've testified around AI. And what I will say about the AI meetings is that they genuinely want to understand what's going on. Whatever letter is next to their name, like, they seem to really care. And there's much less partisanship, much less grandstanding. They just really want to know what's going on. So that gives me a lot of hope that they actually are trying to do the right thing here. Sure. Yeah. You know, when I talk in front of a room full of Democrats and Republicans, the Democrats are more likely to emphasize safety and equity, and the Republicans are more likely to emphasize a free market. But those are on the edges. Both of them are more concerned about really knowing what's going on and how it's going to apply. And that warms my heart. Like, it really is a thing that people seem to really care about getting right and learning. So I think that's really good news for people who aren't necessarily paying attention to having those conversations every day. So I feel really good about that. So the very first step is the fact that they actually realize that this is a thing that's worth thinking about. And I think the second step is understanding that these tools really can be misused, and that what you have to do is think very carefully about how what they're actually, the way they're going to get misused is not through ignorance of how they work, or even ignorance about what they're capable of, but our own ignorance about the way our own biases generate poor decisions. Because what happens, what the real danger here is when it's kind of just everyday life, it's not really the case about siphoning money illegally. That's already illegal. It's really the case of creating an automated way of making the poor decisions we already make faster and more efficient. And then because it's being done by a computer instead of by a person, assuming it must be correct and must be objective. It's not. All the machines are doing is what we're asking them to do. And we're asking them to do something good, they will do something good. We're asking them to do something bad, they will do something bad. They'll just do it faster than we might have done it. So I could pick 1,000 examples from this, but imagine, for example, we have real things around mortgage loans, for example, right? Or whether we think someone should have a longer sentence, or whether they should be granted parole. There's all kinds of built-in biases. We know them, right? Like you want to go before a judge before lunch, not after lunch, or after lunch, not before lunch. These things are real. If we automate the biases into the system, then we're going to do much, much, much worse. So just knowing that and then trying to build systems that address that directly will prevent us from doing lots of horrible things to one another that we otherwise might do. I think that's the single most important thing to avoiding having the tools sort of accidentally be used to hurt people and to make things worse than they already are.
And my brain immediately goes to how can the average person be on alert for this right now? And then it goes right to like a lot of the fake news stories and all that, that, and people don't necessarily know what's real or what to believe. And I think that's kind of leading into the question of what can your average person do to like help with that in their own lives now, I guess. Like, for instance, you go on ChatGPT, it gives you something. Is it as simple as cross-examining the information on ChatGPT and confirming the sources? Are people going to have to sort of take on that role that journalists or researchers have taken on historically in order to find accurate information? And is that something that you think is going to stick around? Or is there going to be maybe another system that can verify, is this true, that people will trust? Because there's not a lot of news sources people trust anymore, not a lot of information. How do people find that trust to not abandon the technology? Because I think we need good people using the technology, since the technology learns from us. Do you have any thoughts on that? A system that could be created or is being created I'm not aware of?
So it's a regulation question, right? So let's take your example of news and social media, right? The problem with our news sources and social media is that we want to be told the things we already believe are true. And the machine, the companies that build these things, the people who build these things, their incentive and motivation is to get you to do more clicking, to get you to stay where you are, to get you to engage more, because it gets some more ad revenue or whatever. It doesn't matter. And I'm not saying those are bad things, but those are the motivations. You want your confirmation bias to be reaffirmed, and they want you to engage more. So that means that all I care about is building a system to get you to engage more. Well, it turns out the way to get you to engage more is to make you angry. It turns out the way to get you engaged more is to make you feel, get you into, you know, these doom loops where I'm scrolling through Twitter or X or TikTok or whatever your favorite thing is, and just like getting more and more down the rabbit hole of whatever, because that gets more and more engagement. And if it's getting me down a rabbit hole that keeps reaffirming the thing that I thought I just learned, then that's even better. Combined with the world where I'm no longer the only person who thinks the crazy thing that I think, but I'm connected to literally 50,000 other people who are on some subreddit somewhere who also believe the crazy thing I think, then I'm getting more positive feedback that the crazy thing that I think is actually right. So I've got two sources of things about the wonderfulness of being connected to the world that gets me to go to have a really bad outcome. The only way around that is to change the incentives. So the incentives cannot be just more engagements. The incentives have to be that truth matters, or a variety of news sources matter to the people who are serving it up to you. And we have to believe culturally that it becomes a value that having seen five different things and drawing my own conclusion is better than seeing five same things and using that to draw my conclusion. So that's both a technical question. It's actually a pretty easy technical question to answer.
Yeah.
It's a, let's call it regulatory question. And then I think most importantly, most difficultly is it's a cultural question. Like, we have to just decide that we value that diversity of exposure more than 5, 10, or 20 other things that we might value. That's the only way that we're going to kind of get from here to there. Kind of change the path that we're walking down.
Are you hopeful that we can?
I am hopeful that we can. Doesn't mean that we will. I mean, the biggest threat to, discourse that we have is not that I now know more than I did before, that there's too much. It's that I choose to believe nothing. I have 10 newspapers I can read, and I used to pick two of them because I couldn't aggregate them. Mm-hmm. And a good outcome is that I get a broad exposure to what's going on. A bad outcome is it gets narrower and narrower and narrower as my preferences take over. But the worst outcome is that I see all 10 of them and I can't decide which one to believe. And so I just decide nothing matters. There is no truth. There is nothing that I can ever make a decision over. And therefore, I might as well just pick the thing that makes me feel good or makes me feel safe, which is actually what ends up happening in the end. And so I decide I have no agency. There is no truth. I'll just pick the thing that makes me feel the best for next Tuesday, and I'll just go from there. That's actually the worst case scenario, because then it doesn't matter.
And that's, you just all
do.
Yeah, it's all politics. It's people elect based on how someone makes you feel. Like, and even a speaker, we didn't hear what you said, but we remember how you made us feel.
Yeah.
And so it's all a lot of rhetoric stuff, a lot of like BS, for lack of a better word. And as a stand-up comedian, you know, I know that a lot of people who come to my shows would be like, oh, I saw your show, I loved it. And then if I say, what was your favorite joke? They'd be like, I honestly can't remember any of them. You know what I mean? So it's just interesting to see that's where the power is. And if you look at our political landscape, that kind of makes a lot of sense, the way politicians, in the same way with our social media algorithms, what they favor is the same thing politicians favor, and that's anger. And that's why we're all on the fringes if you read the news. But if you talk to people in person, it's not like that, because a lot of people have checked out. I don't read the news, you hear them say. Okay. I mean, I think that's what is the problem in our society today is the same problem that we see with artificial intelligence. And I think, you know, as someone who's like deep in the technology side of it, and the culture side needs to be good in order for the technology to be good. Is there a discipline that focuses on how to like almost train people to help culture, to help benefit the culture? You know what I mean?
No, I do know what you mean. So, you know, you asked me earlier why, you know, what we're doing where I am that at UW-Madison that excites me. And, you know, I talked about doing it at scale, which I'm really out in thinking about human beings. But the other part of it is, look, UW-Madison is a great place. I think we all know that. But one of the things that I don't know that people appreciate about it is that it really does have everything. I have 32 direct reports of the provost. There are 17 deans, and there's 13 schools and colleges. There's VetMed, there's S&PH, that is the the health and medical school. There's a school of human ecology. There's engineering. There's nursing. There's, I could name all of these things. What's great about that is when we think about AI and we build these systems, we are purposefully trying to build something that forces or encourages, maybe is a better word, all of those disciplines and ways of thinking together. So we're not just hiring a bunch of engineers and computer scientists who understand AI or want to understand AI. We're thinking about, well, what does it look like on the way this is going to impact humans? What is going to be the impact on equity? What's going to be the impact on education? How do we train people to think about these things? How do we expose them so that they can understand the consequences of using these systems? So our very first hire in this new big initiative is in the School of Human Ecology. It's a person who is thinking about the impact of this technology on people and how you shape the technology based upon human beings being involved in the design process. Like, it's the very first thing that we're doing. And so the answer to your question, insofar as we've got an easy answer, is you've got to involve people in the center of these conversations and people who are thinking about how it's going to impact them, not just thinking about...
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.